What is masculine energy and what does it do for us? How can we balance it and also learn to embody more of it when we need it? Why does everyone speak about toxic masculinity and most of us are missing the point about the divine masculine? How can we support men more and see more of them thrive? How can we see more masculine men around us? Those who have balanced energies, understand their feminine, but also are deeply connected and expressive of their divine masculine. How does sexual shame affect men these days? And how can men break out of it and become empowered, multi-orgasmic lovers? Welcome to this episode about all things masculine energy and men's sexual energy. And in this episode, I speak to Sean Ford Kelly, an executive coach, certified sex educator, angel investor, and philanthropist. He's a founder of Come What May, a sex ed nonprofit that I invite you to check out in this episode description, as you may want to join one of their free circles that are deeply, deeply empowering. And you can learn more about them in this episode. For now, let's hear Sean's story. For us women, it is possible to have it all and embody our truth and power in all areas of life. Feminine Power Podcast is your guide to reconnecting with your feminine essence, reclaiming your power, and rising into your fullest potential. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, co-founder of Feel, the feminine embodiment platform. And here on this podcast, I interview our expert community and our members, and we together share transformative tools, intimate conversations, and embodiment practices, bringing you a wealth of wisdom and practical tools to support your journey. Follow this podcast for your weekly inspiration. And if you'd like to go deeper into your embodiment journey and the awakening of your sexual energy, check out our online membership linked in this podcast description.
Yeah, so I grew up from humble beginnings, I guess, from a council estate in Manchester. I went through the usual path of school and university, and through my university years I wanted to rebel, as most people do from their childhoods, and because there wasn't a lot of financial stability in my youth, I got into financial economics and I wanted to be as rich as possible and drive Lamborghinis in London and go over to New York and be the Wolf of Wall Street. And as I finished university, the financial crisis was still in play. This is 2010. I was applying for jobs, and I remember my life changed on a job interview. I had an investment banking interview with Bank of America Merrill Lynch in the UK. And if I was to get that job, I was to stay in the UK. If not, I was to go and travel. And luckily, that's the only job interview that I didn't get the job. And I traveled through the US and went to Fiji. And then I spent 9 years in Australia. And I had a crossroads of what my life was to turn out to be. I decided to let investment banking go and the financial world go and really follow my life and follow the path of lifestyle design that was beautifully put in the 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, which was a huge inspiration in my life at the time. And so I kept traveling. I ended up receiving sponsorship in Australia. And I built a life there. In the corporate world, still in the recruitment space, and then fast forward a few years to COVID, and I was in the UK visiting friends and family, and my flight back to Australia got cancelled, and I had to build a new life in Europe. I ended up in Ibiza, and this is where my sort of spiritual and personal development started to grow. I let go of my business in Australia to become a coach, which I realized I had been a coach for the past 10 years, but in a different form. And then I stumbled across my passion project, which was Come What May, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more, which now is my baby, and we've supported thousands of people along the way. So that's a sort of brief introduction to how I've got to where I am in this moment.
I want to tell my story, how I met you. And my first deep encounter with you was on this coaching call that you gave me, executive coaching call, where I was pleased with how you hold space, how much respect you give for me as a woman, as a young woman entrepreneur, and how much encouragement I receive, and also how much insight I receive from you just asking the right questions and holding the space. But mostly, what really stayed with me as the biggest takeaway was that embodiment exercise that you guided me through, where I addressed my challenge of being able to resolve conflict and speak up or ask for what I want in the moment. Because I do a lot of work for myself to be an empowered woman, but there are so many things that still on my way I work through. And that was something very, very deep in me, like how to, in the moment, ask exactly for what I want. So we did that embodiment exercise where you guided me through visualization and connection to my direct energy, to my masculine energy. And I could visualize the tunnel and my animal that supports me also in that tunnel, and how my energy that's protective and direct and forward looks like. And therefore, after we had that call, I was able to carry that with me in my life. So be able to tap into that energy and actually visualize and imagine it when I need to ask for something. And that's a takeaway I could have for my entire life. One, amazing, well done you for being able to spot and guide and suggest the right thing. And also two, what the power of embodiment and energy, what the thing is, this power, because, you know, I don't think I can have the same effect and the same tool to carry with me if it's just intellectual, but that real, you know, the combination of intellectual reasoning and that deep embodiment and energy is something like so, so powerful. And I'm grateful for that. And that's why I brought you on this podcast, to talk about that energy, that masculine energy that you showed me from that perspective, but also masculine energy in the wider context of what's happening now in the world, in the wider context of what that means to us, in ourselves, and in our relationship with our masculine lines. Well, all of us have masculine energy. I feel like it's very important to recognize. And also then speak about masculinity, which is a whole other big topic that I feel like we just must bring it up, even though this podcast's main audience is, I mean, the audience is about 75% female, and I am excited to share with women more about this important topic. And yeah, would love to set the stage for you. So Sean, would you like to first tell me more about the session we had? Why did you choose that exercise, and how do you usually work with embodiment?
Firstly, thank you for the words. Yeah, it was a really enjoyable session. Every coaching session is completely different, and intuition leads the right way to go. And for you in particular, I remember the words that you used in terms of wanting to change the way that people perceived your energy, especially when you're going into the bigger meetings, the big vision meetings, maybe investor meetings, and that in the past, maybe some people had seen you as the pretty cute girl and lovely and beautiful and but warm and loving, and people were wanting to invest in you because of this amazing energy that you have. But in that coaching session, you wanted to take a step further. You wanted to be a lot more assertive. You wanted to take a place of more power, so that you felt that you were meeting people as equals and not just this cute woman who's coming and asking for money for a business, whereas actually you are a powerful woman with a powerful business that wants to really do some beautiful things in the world. So I really felt that sort of step up from you in terms of wanting to sort of take your place. And in business, there has to be that masculine element. There has to be that the knowledge within sales of when to turn it into when to turn a meeting into a sort of cutthroat sales aspect to it, rather than just talking and floating and being chaotic. When do we actually stop that and turn to business? And I think in that call and coaching session that we had, there were some tips there for you to really take the reins and be assertive and take the masculine to lead conversations in the way that you wanted to, but also to embody that feeling and embody the masculine essence to take control of different situations and push them towards the way that you wanted them to go to.
That is so true. For me, it's a big challenge, still ongoing, but I feel like since the time we had a session and up until now, I got already so much better at that. If me having a nice girl problem, it's like a nice girl issue I've been carrying, which actually was so helpful to me in my life, but I just outgrew it. And I for a very long time, I still would lean into this comfortable space of a very nice girl that just people want to help, rather than the powerful woman that people want to follow. And I must say that that was one of my pivotal moments, was that session. So thank you. And thank you for describing your process.
Yeah. And then in that coaching call, that this, what we actually looked at then was, okay, so we did a sort of meditation to start to bring in some words of what the masculine feels like to you.
Mm-hmm.
So words such as being assertive and protective and very direct, like these sort of words that we associate with the masculine, to meditate and to really drop into the body and feel where in the body that these feelings come from.
Yeah.
And then we went into a sort of embodiment of the animal, like when we connect to this masculine essence, like what animal comes up to you, where do you feel power? That exercise in itself has been incredibly important for me in my journey of embodying my own masculine and my darker masculine, and when I need to show up. It's been a really important tool through my whole life, and not through my whole life, over the past couple of years, as I've been more embodying this business person. And it's also helped within my personal life as well. And I do have a story of that embodiment, if you would like me to go into that. I had my first child just under 6 months ago, which has been a real beautiful addition to my life, my little girl. And the birth process was not that simple. It ended up being 48 hours. We were at home for 30 hours and then had to go to the hospital and eventually had to have a C-section.
Yeah.
And the aspect of giving birth that nobody really told me about as the father was I didn't expect, I kind of knew it was going to happen, but I didn't expect it. And it was only until I felt it, I suppose that's what wisdom is, to see my partner in so much pain for so long. And it was heartbreaking. And there were certain moments through the birthing process when obviously I'm just sat there holding my partner's hand while she's screaming, contractions every few minutes. And just being there, being the rock, being this masculine presence. And when the doctor, we tried to give birth at home. And when the water broke and there was meconium in the water, so we had to then go to the hospital. And the doctor said that I could have burst into tears. Like I was holding all this emotion from seeing my partner being in so much pain. And I held that back. And then we were in the hospital, kept going. And there was an inner fear in me that I was going to lose them both. This was a fear that had been with me throughout the pregnancy, which was deep in my mind. It wasn't something that I was feeling on a daily basis, but it was there, it was present, that both my partner and my little girl were going to die.
Yeah.
And when the decision was made to go and have a C-section, they did say, because we had tried to give birth, that the baby's head was low and there could be complications. And when as my partner was taken away on the trolley and they had allowed me to go into the room, as I was taken off into another part of the ward to get changed and put my scrubs on. And in that moment, that was the first time I was really left alone. And I just wanted to break down. Like, there was so much emotion there that I just needed to cry. But I was like, if there's one moment in my life where I need to step into my masculine and be there and support my partner, it's right now.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, we embodied this power animal inside. My power animal is a gorilla. So what I do, I embody and I beat my chest and I kind of roar, like, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
So I did that in this hospital ward. There was like, just to embody this masculine, but while I'm putting the scrubs on, it was like, blah, 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 blah. And it worked. I held back my emotions. I went into the delivery room, and within 30 seconds, our little girl was passed to me. I know that some people may be listening and be like, okay, it's not very good for men to hold back their emotions, but I knew that the emotions would come later. But in that moment, it was that tool, this connecting to my masculine power animal, this tool of embodiment that I had been taught a few years ago, which really supported me. And I've been able to have these tools to step into these different parts of ourselves when we need it can be incredibly important.
Yeah. Well, goosebumps here in this story. I can't imagine how hard that was, but also I must really share the appreciation for the masculine energy here. This is why it is so essential in this world for someone, like, right, the masculine can protect and hold space for all this chaos to happen and give it as much safety and protection as possible. So I am proud of you, how you held that. And I'm so glad it, in the end of the day, it all ended up pretty well. And your baby is so beautiful and so calm. This is a story that really shows how important it is to, one, acknowledge the power of the masculine, and two, practice it, right? You remembered your exercise, how amazing it is. That's what I can also do. But of course, my situations haven't been that difficult yet. But this one is the exact example of how important this whole is. Tell me, please, your definition of the masculine energy.
So firstly, it's important to say, before we go into conversations like this, it's easy to drop into labels of I'm masculine, I'm feminine, this part of me is masculine, I act in a certain way because of this. Whereas actually, on the integrated level, we all have masculine and feminine essences.
Yeah.
Masculine and feminine isn't necessarily to do with gender. It's not about male and female. If you connect it to Eastern philosophy and we look at yin and yang, the masculine will be seen as the yang. It has more of a bias for action. It's very much outgoing, whereas the yin is more receptive and it has a bias for flow. So in terms of a sort of a divine masculine, the masculine essence can be competitive, and competition can be a positive thing. You're looking at assertiveness, protectiveness. They're very much goal orientated, rational, independent. And they're quite precise and pick one task over a few. Whereas we look at the feminine, the masculine is usually competitive. Feminine is collaborative. When masculine is assertive, the feminine is receptive. When a masculine is protective, the feminine is nurturing. So we have both of these aspects, and we tend to think as masculine as being more to do with male bodies, because men would generally have more masculine traits than women. However, with the rise of female and feminine empowerment, I like to see feminism actually as sometimes as a paradox, because it's feminism has empowered so many women in the world, but it's also pushed women to be more masculine, and it's trying to push men to be more feminine. So we need to look at these traits within us and know that we are a mixture of everything. We all have masculine and feminine traits, but it's important not to drop into and completely identify with particular labels of one or the other, because as an integrated being, we have all of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will provide a bit of my angle here, because I know how hard it is these days for men to even comment on feminist of expression movement and generally on women, because men get so much blame, especially in the world of the internet. Everyone is offended, everyone is triggered. So here I want to comment as a woman on the feminist movement. One, how amazing it is that women now have equal rights. That's, I think, like, that's the most important thing that's happened. And I, as a woman, want to have an equal right to choose how I want to live my life. And very often, especially on the internet and social media, on big feminist publics that are followed by millions of people, there is a lot of image of how now a feminist woman should look like. And very often, it is very, very far from what I want to live my life like. And very often, I feel like I am being shamed for wanting to perhaps lean more into my feminine, where I want my man to be more of a provider, where I want to be able to, maybe I want to be a stay-at-home mom in the future when I complete all my amazing startup endeavors. And a lot of the time, those desires are now being a bit shamed or seen as less important for a woman, because what a woman now needs to be like, needs to be a super boss babe. While it's not necessarily what all of us want all the time, that's just one example. But there are lots of ways where feminist movement can be a bit distorted.
If you are resonating with this episode and you are ready to take your embodiment journey to the next level, I invite you to join the Feel membership, your guide on a journey of reconnecting with and embodying the power of your feminine energy. As a member, you'll get access to the daily embodiment practices created by our powerful experts and become a part of our community. Knowledge that you receive on this podcast is gold, but the real change happens when you integrate these learnings into your life. With our online membership, you can cultivate a consistent self-love and embodiment practice to nurture your energy. Our members are experiencing profound shifts from healing past traumas to reigniting their sensual fire to manifesting their wildest dreams. And we want that for you too. So if you are feeling the call to go deeper, check this podcast description for the link to join our membership.
And secondly, feminine, masculine, again, it is all within us. And therefore, I want to switch back into the healthy and powerful masculine that, first of all, we've already seen and discussed in this podcast. But secondly, I want to know, where should I be looking for masculine as my support?
Firstly, just replying on your previous sentences, I think it's important to recognize the geographical differences between equality for women. Obviously, in different parts of the world are still in a fight for what us in the West have been able to create. The difficult aspect of this is that we do live in a masculine capitalist world where money is the greatest target for people. So I think it's a lot easier for myself, as somebody who has created financial freedom for himself, who is, I guess, sat on an ivory tower, to be able to comment on the world in this way, when there's so many people that are fighting to survive. And to fight to survive in this world, you have to be super competitive, and you have to drop into these negative aspects of masculinity, of wanting to get ahead and crush competition, and not being soft or weak or compassionate, and working 80 hours a week, looking for like individual wins rather than the sort of well-being of the whole. When you're struggling to survive, and when you are struggling to pay the bills, of course you are going to look after yourself. And I think that there are obviously positives to masculinity in terms of where we are with regard to innovation, and that the quality of life for billions of people around the world has been increased exponentially because of this masculine way of being innovative and pushing society forward. However, when you've got people at the top that are the super, super rich, who are just hoarding money and creating this competition on the lower levels, I find it really difficult to see how there is a complete way out.
Yeah.
There's a Charles Eisenstein kind of quote, and I'm going to be paraphrasing here, which I really align to. And he's talking about the fall and the lack of community, and that everybody seems to be talking about community and wanting to be closer to people. However, he says that community started to fail when the things that we used to do for free, people then had to pay for. So we've lost these essence of community at a grassroots level because we started to charge for aspects, whether it be cooking for people or childminding, etc. When we started having to pay for all of these, it caused even more separation within communities, and then everything became about money.
Yeah. So
these are obviously big sort of existential, socio-economic conversations that we're having, and it's difficult to see a way out. Really starting to embrace in all of us the healthy masculine,
mm-hmm.
which is the protective nature, to actually start to want to look after communities and be providers for ourselves and the people closest to us, but also our communities. Like, how do we support our communities? And then how do we support the planet as a whole, and support regions and nations? The feminist movement has pushed men to be more feminine, which has caused a sort of crisis in masculinity. Actually, what we need is we need these polarities. We need the masculine, we need the feminine, but we need them both in healthy aspects rather than the shadow that is causing a lot of pain.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a complex issue, and indeed we aren't able to find answers on how to create a really balanced world, especially on a global scale. And how we live in the West is very different to the rest of the world. And I come from Kazakhstan. Literally, when I travel there now as an empowered woman, I can't even speak to any authority without a man behind my back and by my side, because no single word from a woman's mouth will ever be taken seriously. So that's meaning to any kind of even policeman on the street, I need to call my dad to come and talk with me. So I can definitely relate to the fact that it's like so far from reality, the real equality in the world. But I feel like what we can do as human beings with our souls and energy is for the world, and especially for those who are now a bit more privileged and have the general daily survival needs already sorted. What we can do is to rise and to really work on ourselves and the balance, and become an example, and also provide better energy for our communities, as you mentioned. And every single event that we do with women, there would be at least once someone coming up and saying, oh, I don't feel safe with men, I don't, or I'm tired of dating all these feminine men. There would be a lot of concerns that they bring up that are all connected to this misbalance. And again, not to blame or shame men. This is a whole melting pot that we have created as a society through so many historical, cultural, economic levels. But what I want to hear from you is, one, how can women better understand men, and how can they support a change?
Difficult question.
Yeah.
These aspects of masculinity, such as protectiveness and even assertiveness sometimes, that when you ask a woman what is a toxic masculine, they'd maybe be able to reel off 10 different aspects of a toxic masculine. But then if you ask them what is a positive masculine, they would have a lot less answers for that, because women seem like to hijack the positive masculine as traits for women. Like protectiveness, for example. It's like, oh, well, women can be protective. Like, yeah, okay, that's right. But it is generally like a masculine essence. What I would say is for women to look at their own relationships to their masculine and their feminine. Like, is your masculine integrative and integrated? Is your feminine integrated? Like, are you... write down what it is exactly that you are looking for and how you want the masculine to make you feel. And can your masculine inside you make you feel those things? I think that's an important aspect of that.
Yeah.
Also, to your original question, I think it's important for people to understand that there are fundamental differences between men and women on a physiological level, and on the way that we react to different things. For example, emotionality. I hear so much within our world about men being emotionally unavailable. But when you actually dig into what that means, is that I think some women expect their men to be able to talk about their emotions to them, whereas actually, women don't really want that. Women generally don't want their men to be super emotional all the time. And I think it's important that men do speak about their emotions, but I think it's important that men find a good group of men to speak to about that. This is why it's so important that men go to men's circles and are able to access real positive groups of men, and outside of this old paradigm of like unconscious men at the pub. I think it's important that men have male friends, that they have these support networks for them, and that they do things with them, whether they go out hiking or go cycling or that sort of thing. I think that's a real the stereotype, I guess, within some relationships, is that women almost control men and they don't let men go and be men. And I think it's important to let men do men things and to go and do man stuff. And I think it's really important that we have these different avenues to embrace these different parts of ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. Let's go a little deeper into these men connecting with each other, doing men things. It is indeed, it can be difficult and alienating for men to really step into their power these days, especially in big cities. There is so little community for men. And indeed, very often, it's the only thing that they can do together would be this pub kind of connections, especially, I mean, in the UK, that's where I live. That's the most common thing. While there are also amazing things that men can do together, all the men's work that's going on right now, men's circles, that when I see that, first of all, I find all the men who do that very, very sexy. And secondly, I'm so happy that exists. But also, there is not enough of that, especially in certain places, even in our Western bubble. I can't see enough of that in big cities. I see a lot of that beauty in Lisbon or in Ibiza. Don't see enough of that in London. I would love you to describe, what is that work about? What are men's circles? What is men's work?
And to your point, I actually know maybe two or three men's organizations in the UK that are doing some really amazing amazing things with regard to retreats and circles, etc. So if you haven't been to a circle before, whether it be a mixed circle or a women's circle or men's circle, a circle is an opportunity for people to gather and to be able to discuss a topic from a more heart-centered, deeper level. I remember my entrance into men's work was in Ibiza and sitting in men's circles and seeing one man open up about his troubles gives you permission to open up and do the same. And I think it's really important that men do talk about these things and the different aspects of our lives. In the UK, I think the number one way to die for men under 40 is suicide. And I think it's super important that men have these avenues to go to just to talk about the life and to talk about the difficulties that they face. And I remember I had a question at the Feel event in Lisbon, the salon, from a woman. And I believe that there's this thought process for women that men don't talk about their emotions, that they don't connect. Whereas actually in real world, like when you put a group of men together in circle and you get people to talk about what's going on for them, men open up really quickly.
Men.
I believe that actually it's a lot easier for men to open up to other men than it is for women to open up to other women. I think we have this toxic femininity, this sister wound. And it's right, because when men are in circle, men can trust men because men tend to be not judgmental. They don't really judge each other. Men aren't really gossipers. That would be one of the shadow aspects of the feminine in terms of their competition, would be sort of gossip and bitching behind people's backs. But in a men's space, that you feel really safe. And actually, yeah, men are able to open up super quickly. And I've seen it in every sort of men's circle that I've been at, whether it be at festivals or locally, online, that when you give men the permission to be able to speak about different aspects of their life, they grab it with both hands.
Yeah. Circles are powerful. I mean, that's where my journey started as well. What about men's work? You know, all those retreats, immersions, where men really get to deep dive into their nature as men. I've been seeing some of that, observing from the side, and I've been fascinated by it and love what's happening. Do you have some insights you'd like to share?
Again, I just think it's really powerful. I think retreats for everyone, and there seems to be this power and force behind retreats at the moment, where retreat venues kind of around the world are being sold out kind of months in advance, because people are choosing to go to a retreat and have an embodied deeper experience rather than go on holiday.
Mm.
They're wanting to feel something different. And in these spaces, in these containers where people can really have a space to access emotion, to access different layers of emotion as well, whether it be from sadness to grief to anger and rage. These aspects of ourselves, especially as a man, where men are afraid of their anger and rage, and they should be. These emotions have caused a lot of pain in the past. And because we're in societies that don't teach us how to deal with our emotions, that when these emotions do come up, we don't feel that we can control it. So what happens is that they linger within our bodies. So to go to a retreat where you can be angry and you can be rageful and be seen within that and it be accepted is completely liberating. And I would highly recommend everyone at some stage find these sort of transformational retreats to go to, because they are completely life-changing.
Yeah. Having said that, there is this one subject that we must talk about. Now, again, in Lisbon Salon, even though I'm sure there were questions like that, men aren't very open to talk about, sexuality, especially when there is some sort of problem or insecurity, while you prove that it's not the case. And it's actually so healing and liberating, and for men to have space to actually talk about sexuality. It's just exactly what we need for more goodness in the world. It's like such a fundamental pillar. Talk to us about that.
So as I mentioned before, I was in Ibiza and just after COVID, so 2021, and on my personal development journey, got into men's work and was absolutely loving it. And there was a little bit of a gap for me. I was already on my journey into sacred sexuality and accessing the shame around different aspects of my own sexuality, including a difficult kind of compulsive relationship to masturbation. And I remember having a conversation with my cock for the first time, and thought me and my cock, best mates, we've been through a lot together. And when I actually spoke to him, he was like, "You've been abusing me for the past 20 years. It was a difficult process of acceptance for me, as well as inquiry and growth. But at that time, there was no real spaces to talk about it. There were so many different men circles popping up, and you could go and talk about different emotions and how you feel, et cetera, et cetera. But there was nothing to do with sexuality. I remember at the time I was trying to practice sort of semen retention.
Yeah.
And exploring my sexual energy. And I had sex with my partner and I ejaculated. And I remember lying there afterwards, I was like, fuck's sake. Like, I wish I had like a group of guys where we could be accountable to each other to go through these practices. So the idea came up to do like a month-long container called Come Not May. And a few weeks after that, I did a breathwork session. And out of that came this idea to set up a non-profit in the men's space where men could have safe spaces to go to actually talk about different aspects of sex. So we held our first men's circle about 2.5 years ago. We were online and in person. And within the first two circles, we already had men opening up about premature ejaculation, erectile dysfunction, sexual trauma, and also people talking about incestual relationships and these deeper, darker aspects of ourselves, but really fundamentally connecting to shame. I wanted it to be my gift to the world. So I wanted to create a nonprofit. I knew deep inside how big the organization would eventually get, but I personally didn't want to kind of profit from that. And over the past 2.5 years, we've held over 150 events. 6 months after our first men's circle, we also opened up to women as well. We had our first women's circle and then started having mixed circles where men and women and non-binary people could come and have open conversations together, which was also really beautiful.
Yeah.
So we've had thousands of people sit in circle from all over the world. We continue to have circles every fortnight. And it kind of became my passion project, my purpose, my reason for being, I guess.
Yeah. So powerful and so beautiful. I very much respect the power of circle, something I do for myself regularly. And that's how my journey of healing started from a circle. I came once to a circle when I was, I don't know, 19 or something. Randomly, I didn't even understand what that was, somewhere in London. And that was when I confronted my huge childhood traumas really out of nowhere, cried like a baby through the whole time. And that's when my journey started, I think. Started in many ways before it, but that was a really strong moment for me to recognize the power of community. Would you tell me more about male sexuality, the nuances of that? I understand it's a very big question and subject, but if you could tell us, people of all sorts of genders listening to this podcast, what are the most important things for us to understand about male sexuality? Because there's so much misconception, so much misunderstanding, and I just want to have a chance to hear a little bit more from you, what you've learned and what you feel is important for people to know.
I suppose, as with any idea, that comes through, it sort of starts small and then gets bigger and bigger. So for Come What May, like the original idea was to have a space for people to talk about sex. So simple. And as the organization grew, and as I went deeper into the sexuality world, I realized that this was actually a lot bigger than what I first thought. And with the big premise being, if we as the wisdom keepers in society are not able to have open and honest conversations about sex, then how are we going to support this next generation of beings that have a completely different background when it comes to their sexuality, especially in those early years of exploration? I'm 37. Like my first entrance into pornography was through like dial-up internet, where it would take me like 3 weeks to download a video. Whereas younger people now have access to hardcore pornography in an instant. And the rates of erectile dysfunction are rising. The highest growth rate of erectile dysfunction is actually between 18 and 21. One in 10 9-year-olds have seen pornography. I think 50% of 13-year-olds. We're in a different world now with regard to where sexuality is for both men and for women. In surveys, 50% of 16 to 21-year-olds believe that women either enjoy or expect physical aggression during sex, which includes airway restriction. So these teenagers and younger people have a different baseline of what sexuality means to them. And I think it's really important for us to be having these conversations and know that sexuality is potentially becoming more violent. I think it was 79% of 18-year-olds have watched or seen pornography that includes some sort of violence. So we need to recognize that this can be a problem. And we also need to recognize men's parts in that. And I think having a space for men to be able to talk about these different aspects of ourselves and own these different aspects of ourselves as well, that own that we do have an animal inside us, to own that we like to take dominant sexual positions, and to know that sexual energy can be like a drug for men. It can be very hypnotizing, and it's very, I'm certainly not condoning sexual violence. I just trying to paint a picture of the conditions that it can take for someone to become a perpetrator within the sexual world. Men need to take ownership that they can lose themselves in this sexual energy.
Yeah.
I use my own personal experience in this, in that during my heavy masturbation days, like I'd use masturbation as emotional release, as a tool for to become more stable. When I was going through difficult times, I kind of locked myself away for a few days and just masturbate and eat shit food and just completely avoid my feelings that way. And it was very destructive. And what I noticed was that within these sort of masturbation sessions, I don't know whether you know that to receive the same amount of dopamine today and doing the same activity as yesterday is quite different and difficult. To receive the same dopamine, people have to do more intense or extreme things. So during watching pornography, you could go down a pornographic rabbit hole and go to very hardcore things. And in that moment of ejaculation, there's like instant shame, because you look and you're like, what have I just watched? Like, how was that a turn on for me a few seconds ago? And I think it's really important for us men to be able to learn how to control this energy more. Yeah, also with that, the rates of child abuse are incredibly high. That when you dig into the statistics, and the statistics on top of that of people that become perpetrators of sexual violence, and the rates of child abuse for them as a child is super high. So it's important that as communities that we look after child abuse victims and not to treat them as a victim for their whole life, but to give them the support that they need through childhood and as an adult as well, to keep an eye on these people. Yeah, it's a part of male sexuality that we need to own and take control of, but we also need to recognize the conditions to create a rapist.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing this. I don't think there is enough such open conversation, especially personal experience sharing. And you've touched upon a lot of really important societal issues. Well, first of all, porn. I believe that there is the growing conversation and awareness, and you're a big part of it around this issue. I do hope that this goes far and more people recognize how big of an issue it is. But I want to provide, just lastly, actually, on your last point still, because it also touches me as a victim of child abuse. I must say that what I'm really passionate about, and like part of one of my big reasons for being leading field, is I really believe education from a very young age for people can make such a big difference. Sex education, specifically, if we teach young men what sex is, what sexual energy is, what all these dopamine is, what porn is, what the relationship with a woman is, how to really make a woman feel good, how to make them feel good, like all these simple educational bits that we as a society often actually just don't really focus on or talk about. We'd rather talk about STIs and all of that stuff, but do not include the relational and pleasure aspect, could make a big difference, because perhaps men would grow up with a lot more knowledge that they can empower themselves with, and a lot of the issues would be mitigated. But then on the victim side of things, and I don't want to say that just like only women are victims, men are victims too, especially of child abuse, and also sometimes women can be the perpetrators as well. For a child, and I speak from my personal experience, if only I and other children just knew enough information about what is the ownership of our body, what sex is, what does it all mean when someone else is coming after you, if we had the basic education, we would not be freezing in the moment so much. And just having the knowledge is such a power. And that's what I want to really highlight here because for everyone listening, everyone who will ever have children, how important it is to really explain these things holistically, and not just also have the shame that we carry and brush over these conversations and just hope that people figure it out by themselves. But lastly, I want to highlight the good aspects of male sexuality, because, you know, we have touched quite a lot on the dark side. Well, I keep learning and learning more and more as I grow into this work, and especially by really leaning deeply more into spiritual aspects of sexuality and into tantric world, that man's sexuality can be such a gift when it's conscious, but it has to be conscious on both sides and on the receiver as well. The penetration can be the most healing thing that can happen. Like, I do receive a lot of healing through the penetration of my man. Dick can be the magical wand that can resolve, even on the somatic level, deep-seated trauma inside a woman. And of course, then the beauty of having really deep connection, sexual connection with a man, and for me, like, and for a lot of women who get deeply into this work, is deeply, deeply powerful, transforming, and can lead to huge amount of liberation. So having said that, sexual energy and sex is such a power. It can destroy people's life, it can heal people's lives, and it's a big power of all of our lives. And there is really not enough conversation about it. And that's why I feel like your work is so important for Come What Wayne, and all the work of all the sex educators that are arising right now. Yeah. So I just wanted to really highlight all these things, and hopefully that inspires people to look deeper into their own sexuality. What do they do with their sexual energy right now?
Well, I'd like to actually bring up the orgasm gap here as a bit of an example. So many people may have heard about the orgasm gap, but I'll explain it. So the orgasm gap is the gap between the percentage of heterosexual men and heterosexual women who report that they usually or always orgasm during sex. And for heterosexual men, 95% of them would usually or always orgasm, whereas it's 65% for heterosexual women. Now, you could interpret that in so many different ways, and the biggest interpretation that I've seen from that online is that men are bad and men need to please their women more. Like, this is a perfect example of the patriarchy of men receiving more pleasure than women. Whereas actually there's an underlying piece here that nobody seems to be talking about, and that is that men are only given one avenue for pleasure. If you think that pornography is the main form of sex education, men have been taught that having sex very hard and thrusting is the way to orgasm, and that's it. And I think that the average time for men to ejaculate is 5 to 7 minutes, so it's not a long time at all. But men haven't been educated in terms of the pleasure that they can feel.
Yeah.
Men, and I should make an assumption in this, during the orgasm gap research, that when we talk about orgasm, we talk about ejaculation. Whereas actually, men have different ways to orgasm outside of ejaculation. And that's one piece of information that men need to know, is that ejaculation and orgasm are two separate independent events that happen at the same time. And it is possible to split that and to be able to have orgasm outside of that. So whether that be through prostate stimulation or through energetic sexuality and or energetic orgasms, there are different ways to pleasure. That there is a piece within that kind of sort of like lack of education for men, that because there's only this one way, that especially when men have a fear of sort of like losing their erection and what that means and the shame of what that is, a lot of men may feel that they just have to get the job done and it be over, whereas women need a lot longer to be able to warm up, to be able to orgasm. And obviously women have a varied degrees of ways to orgasm themselves. The big interpretation for me, like looking at the orgasm gap, is that we need to educate men in terms of being able to receive more pleasure,
yeah,
and to release shame. I remember the first exercise in a sacred sexuality retreat that I did, and I had to sort of like touch myself softly, like touch myself on my arm, and that was so icky and uncomfortable because I had this program in me that it was gay.
Yeah.
And then I had to unpack that. Oh my God, there's like this ingrained homophobia took from childhood when I remember being in school and talking about wanking around a table in year seven and people saying, oh, you touch yourself? Oh, that's gay if you're not don't have a woman to touch you. And it's like these programs that can condition within us that really hold men back from being able to feel a lot of pleasure. And I think for women listening to this, like to empower men to feel different types of pleasure and to not put pressure on them to always be hard and erect and show some soft cock love and really start to have devotion for a cock, whether it is hard or soft, and really embrace into, because one of the biggest fears for a man is when you lose an erection, firstly, it feels shit. It doesn't feel nice. And secondly, there's like a shame that's added on it, because if you're in a heterosexual relationship, that your partner may think it's about them, that they're not attracted to them anymore, so that's why they're not getting erect. So it adds these different layers, and it can be a big cycle. So to be able to embrace the waves of erections and from soft cocks to hard cocks and just be super playful about it, I think that's a huge piece of advice that I'd give to the heterosexual women within this group, is to really come to devotion towards any cut, not just a hard cut.
Yeah, it requires education on both sides for sure. Even for women, like I do believe they need to learn a little bit more about male's pleasure and what's possible for men, because we women also are conditioned to see erection as the thing that must be happening and otherwise take it personally. There is a lot of education that's missing on our side as well to understand men properly. But again, it's really not the most important thing.
And to understand themselves. Most women may be very habitual with their own self-pleasure practice and maybe just go quickly and to have a 5-minute wank and go straight to their clit, whereas actually I think there's 8 or 9 different ways for women to have orgasms, and to be able to explore their bodies in a different way is also really important. Because the more that women get to know their own bodies, the more that they can direct men in terms of what feels good for them, which means that everybody's winning in that situation.
Yeah, there is so much to learn and explore, especially with the lack of education that majority of us have. And I also feel like it's such an endless, deep, and really exciting journey, because you can keep learning so many things once you get into sexuality and understanding of it. There are spiritual aspects, physical aspects, polarity aspects, so much stuff. And yeah, shame is the real problem that stands in the way for many of us to actually even start exploring that. I wonder, now speaking to you about this and understanding how much depth there is to actually continue deep diving into this, the side of male sexuality and what can be done for all of us to improve our relationships with each other and sexually and energetically. I'm wondering if this should be something we cover on our free online class end of November.
Whatever feels right in the moment.
Yeah, I feel like we can deep dive even more. Where can men start their learning curve?
I think there's so many resources online to start, and I really think to get into men's work in some way and to join a sexuality circle. You're more than welcome to join a come what may circle that we have every fortnight, whether it be a men's circle or a mixed circle. We also have many different events throughout the year as well. And yeah, the internet can be overwhelming with the amount of education that's out there. And I think it's really important to have embodied experiences, whether it be to go to retreats that include sexuality, to enter into the tantra world, but actually feel it themselves, not just look at Instagram, because there's so much information and education that it can just go in one eye and come out the other. And it's important to take steps forward in terms of your own journey and whatever feels right for you. It's also a super personal journey, and when you see and find the right teachers that you align with, then dive in and give it a go.
Okay, that's beautiful. I have a complicated question. I feel like that will be very interesting for most female listeners. How can we women actually bring it up to men? You know, like the sexual exploration. Say a woman wants her man to look into sexuality with an open mind and perhaps explore more of sacred sexuality together. Can we believe that this is difficult to bring up? Because oftentimes we have this... Maybe it's stereotype, maybe it's real, that men get a little bit offended if we ask for something like that. They're like, oh, am I not enough? How can we bring it up in a healthy way?
It's also okay to offend people. I know this can be difficult for many women in terms of having like really difficult, uncomfortable, honest conversations. Yeah, it's not easy to bring up, but... And the worst thing that you could do in a relationship is fake an orgasm. Nobody wins in that scenario. So being able to, firstly, as I mentioned before, to learn about your own body, to know what feels good for you to start your journey in terms of your own exploration, and then to be guiding your partner. And if your partner isn't isn't pleasing you and isn't giving you the sort of pleasure that you want, tell him. And yeah, it's going to hurt. He's going to feel shit. But there's nothing a man likes to hear least than he's not good in bed. So he will put steps in place to get better in bed. It's good. It's good for men to be challenged, and it's good for men to be pushed into wanting to be better. And if they don't accept that challenge, that's a different story. But men want to be the best. And if you tell your man that you're wanting more and that it's not good enough at the moment, then he would hopefully step into that.
All right. Yeah. I can imagine the conversation being hard, but also that's absolutely true. Like, men like to be the best. How would they know if we just fake? Well, on this very, very useful advice, I think I'll be coming to conclusion. But I would like you to share, where can people find you, join your circles, work with you as an executive coaching offering?
So firstly, I'll talk about Come What May. It's as we ended on the sexuality piece. So www.comewhatmay.life, we're comewhatmay.life on Instagram. As I mentioned, we've got circles every fortnight that are free. The majority of our events are free, by the way. And we have in early December a sex education summit called Expose, which is 9 days of education. Maria is going to be joining that as well and running some embodiment work. We have 30 speakers talking about all different aspects of sex education and then some integration pieces within circles as well. If you are looking for a sexuality retreat and sex education retreat to join, then we have our first retreat in Spain in early May next year. So really big, exciting events, and the maturing of Come What May into a sort of bigger organization and expanding our offerings over the next 6 months, which is really beautiful. And then me personally, I can be found easily on LinkedIn. So that's Sean Ford Kelly for my own coaching. If you are interested in having a coaching session with me, I do an opening a coaching session for free. So please feel free to contact me. And yeah, it's my way of giving back to the community. And if people want to stick on and stay coaching with me after that, and if it aligns, then amazing.
And that's it for today. I hope this episode has left you feeling inspired, empowered, and more connected to your truth. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to the Feminine Power Podcast and leave us a rating. If you want me to ask any specific questions to our future guests, please do leave us a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast, and I will definitely address them. Your support means the world and helps us reach more women with this transformative work. And if you're ready to experience even more feminine magic, I invite you to explore the Feel membership. Head to feelup.co/membership or find the link in this podcast description to learn more and claim your spot. Until the next time, keep shining your light, keep embracing your unique journey, and keep rising into the powerful human you were born to be. I'm your host, Maria Greenina.